Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Community Blood Services of Illinois, providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston-Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. Blood donation takes only 45 minutes and saves lives. Donation information at 367-2202 or on the web at bloodservices.org.
It's 6 minutes past 1 o'clock. Today, the afternoon magazine features an interview from the AM 580 archives. Since it's a recorded interview, we won't be taking phone calls this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and FM 90.9 HD2. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. You'll find us online, by the way, at will.illinois.edu. Every day, we interact with people who influence our lives in small and great ways, but who are not part of our inner circle. That is the opening of a book titled Consequential Strangers, The Power of People Who Don't Seem to Matter But Really Do, written by Melinda Blau and Karen Fingerman. And Melinda Blau is our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. She's a journalist and author. Her co-author, Karen Fingerman, a social scientist, is Berner Hanley Professor at Purdue University. Most consequential strangers, say the authors, enrich our lives and serve as a kind of social glue. Yet often, we take them for granted. Let me tell you a bit more about our guest, Melinda Blau. She writes about relationships and trends and has written a dozen books, including the best-selling Baby Whisperer series. Consequential Strangers, The Power of People Who Don't Seem to Matter But Really Do is published by W.W. Norton. Melinda Blau, good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Sure. When and how did you and your co-author, Consequential Strangers, first become acquainted?
Well, actually, we became acquainted because I had contacted her. I was working on a project about mothers and daughters, and Karen had written had done a study about mothers and daughters and written it up in a book, and we stayed in touch after that. I had a website at the time with my daughter, and it was all about the mother-daughter relationship, and Karen and I stayed in touch, and just over the years, we kind of introduced each other to our respective worlds. So at one point, she'd said to me, you know, I really feel like I'd like to write something for a popular magazine. And I said, well, why don't you write something for the website first? And one thing led to another, you know, how these casual relationships. And we'd be out of touch for a long time. And at one point, she sent me an article that she had written for an academic journal, or it was a chapter in a book. And in the title, but not in the body of the piece, was the term consequential strangers. And as a journalist, I have many consequential strangers. Everyone I interview is a consequential stranger. Mm-hmm. Plus, I live in several different places, so in each of those places, I have service providers and neighbors and other people in the community who are my consequential strangers. And when I saw the term, it immediately resonated with me.
And how did Karen Fingerman come to coin this term? What was she seeing going on, and how did she take it in?
Well, at first, Karen, there were very, very few social scientists even looking at what they term in academia peripheral relationships or weak ties. But a few sociologists had, and they had talked about the importance of connecting with people outside of your family and close friends. But not a lot had been written about it, and there was not a lot in psychology. And the way she tells the story, she was sitting in a conference one day. It was snowing outside. It was a professional conference, and her mind wandered. And suddenly what popped into her head was, why do old people, she's really, one of her specialties is gerontology, why do old people send so many Christmas cards? And she decided to do a study about it. And she found out in the study that the reason that people send Christmas cards is because, not to their loved ones, because we don't need to send cards really to our loved ones. We usually see them and speak to them. But we tend to send cards to people who are on the periphery of our lives, people that have done services for us, that we've done business with, maybe friends we've lost touch with, a college roommate, an old neighbor, a former boss, and it makes us feel more embedded in our communities to feel that way. Even the community of the community of the world, you know. And this is before the internet really had, before we had social networking and Facebook. So Karen kind of sat on that study, and she published it. And you know, when I started researching this with her, we looked at not only her studies but other things that had been published in the medical field, in by psychologists, and kind of cobbled together really the research that had never been put together in one place. And the story that the research tells is that we cannot survive. You know, we always know we can't survive without loved ones, but we also can't survive without our consequential strangers.
Now, is a consequential stranger the same as an acquaintance? And
yes.
Where is the line between consequential stranger and friend?
Okay, that's a great question, and everyone asks it. And I have to answer it in two ways. One is to say that each of us has a different yardstick for measuring friendship. But most of us know who our close friends are. And all of relationships are on a continuum. So with the stranger at one end and, say, soulmate at the other end. And there's a vast territory between just beyond stranger and just short of friend, and certainly short of close friend. And that's where you'll find consequential strangers. We thought about possibly having some kind of classification of different types of consequential strangers, because obviously your hairdresser is not the same as the guy who sells you coffee every morning in a coffee shop you go to. So there are different levels even among consequential strangers. And the piece about each of us having our own social yardstick, so to speak, to measure our relationships is very, very personal. I remember while I was writing the book, a friend of mine told me about her husband, who was on phone with his army buddy. And it was a guy he saw maybe every 5 years. And he got off the phone and referred to him as his best friend. Now, she was, you know, astounded by that, because to her, it seemed like they should be probably consequential strangers, because he hardly knew him. But the fact was that to him, you know, his answer was, he had my back during the war. That kind of relationship never changes, no matter how infrequently you see somebody. To other people, you know, they have a lot of friends, but they can't all be close friends. It's like Facebook. You know, people say, I've got 760 friends on Facebook. They're not all your friends. Most of them are your consequential strangers. And what I say in the book is, it really doesn't matter what you call people. You know, we use the word friend. Studies have shown that we use the word friend for just about every relationship. My friend at church, my friend down the block, you know. Yet they're really not friends. When you push the discussion and say, well, you know, how close are you to that person?
Yeah.
And the other thing that I found in researching this book, and I did over 200 interviews with people, and I've talked about it informally over the last 3 years, what I found is that we really can't classify relationships even as close or not close, because you could feel very close to somebody that you've just met. You could just click with them. You might have something very important in common. For example, maybe both of you are going through a difficult disease at the same time. You meet each other at a support group or in a doctor's office. And suddenly, that person is really important to you, and it's as if you've known each other all your life. So how do you classify that? He or she may only be a consequential stranger, but there still might be quite a depth of feeling there.
Yeah, but it's a continuum, and friendships ebb and flow.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Yeah. One of the ways you describe these relationships is as a social convoy. Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting concept. What do you mean, and who coined that term?
Well, actually, that's a term that dates back to the 1980s. A woman psychologist named Toni Antonucci was studying adult life development. And at that point, attachment theory, which is what many parenting books today are about, attachment theory, which it holds that, you know, that it's most important for a baby to have an attachment figure. And that attachment figure allows the baby to crawl across the room toward a shiny object because they know that the attachment figure is always going to be there. If the baby turns their head, oh, I'm still okay because I'm in, you know, that person is right there for me. And Toni Antonucci decided that why isn't this true, continually true in adulthood? You know, and most people talk about intimate relationships as, you know, you need that attachment figure. And I contacted Toni when I was doing this book because I love the concept of the social convoy, which holds, it's a great image and it's a great metaphor. We travel through life, and if you imagine yourself in a car driving down the road of life, around you are vehicles carrying all the people that have joined you on the way. And so you get to see that your life is kind of a cavalcade of people, not just a series of events. And you get to see, well, who influenced me for good or for bad? Who helped me? Who gave me information that was vital? Who gave me support when I needed it? And you'll see that it's not just your loved ones. Often it's the consequential stranger. It's the person who, as I said, you might, if you're going through a disease, you might meet them in a doctor's office. If you're doing a work project, you might know a friend of a friend who you remember was doing business in Mumbai, and you call them and say, you know, I need a contact there. And if you look at your social convoy, you can see that the intimates stick with you probably for the whole journey, we hope. But your consequential strangers sometimes take a different road, they go off, take a different exit, or they drop behind in the rearview mirror. And yet they're always part of your convoy. They're there for you if you need to make those contacts again.
Yeah. You tell us in the book about a Fortune columnist who found himself unable to delete contacts,
right,
old bittersweet contacts from
right,
his BlackBerry.
Right. And you know, the wonderful thing is about all the new digital technologies, whether it's BlackBerries or Facebook or LinkedIn, is that we get to see our social convoys. That's what they really represent. They represent what social network analysts call our personal networks. And basically that's what a social convoy is. But I like the image of a convoy because it connotes movement. And as you said before, relationships are very fluid, and they change as we change. So, for example, if you move out of a town, you leave a lot of your consequential strangers behind. And that is, in fact, what really made me understand the importance of consequential strangers. I moved up to Massachusetts from Manhattan in 1990, and all of a sudden, all of those people, the greengrocer, the butcher, the people I would run into on street corners and have a 10-minute conversation with, they were all gone. And that made me realize how important consequential strangers were.
Mm-hmm. Well, now thinking of online social networks, do you think we're seeing an evolution in the meaning of community?
Absolutely. I think that one of the things that's happened is that community no longer has to be bounded by geographic lines. We can have a community that exists in cyberspace and feel very close and very connected and have a common cause with those people. And also, it's very important to note that most online relationships migrate offline. Very few of us, so I think the percentage is 5% of people only socialize online. Most people use their online contacts as a way of keeping in touch with greater numbers of people than we ever could keep in touch with, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also, for it's people we see in person as well.
Mm.
You know, a lot of people have, criticized, well, what is this social media all about? And I think it's all about the need for connection. And that's what this book is about. It's you know, what we want to show is the importance of this broader social landscape. And luckily, because of the new media, we can keep in touch with it.
Yeah. Well, the new media, as you say, give us a culture of continuous connection.
Right.
And I'm wondering, though, if that continuous connection, in fact, strengthens or dilutes relationships between people.
My belief is that it strengthens relationships because, you know, when you communicate by email, if that's the only, and I say that because I don't think that's the only way people communicate. I think that it gives us many more ways to reach out to our people. So if you don't have a lot of time, you can dash off an email. And if the other person doesn't have a lot of time, when he or she does, then he can read the email on his time. And it gives us a lot more flexibility in communication. I'm fond of quoting Barry Wellman, who's a very well-known sociologist. And Barry has studied community and the Internet. And he warns people, you know, not to think of technology didn't just happen. We've been moving toward this point, you know, since the Pony Express. You know, newspapers and telephones and railroads and airplanes have all made communication and contact between people easier and easier. And more convenient. And we have just now reached a point where we can contact people any time of night or day for very little money and very easily. So I think it helps community.
Hmm. How do relationships that take place in physical spaces differ from digital spaces?
Well, as I said, I don't think that many people have just sole digital relationships. But that said, obviously, you don't have the eye contact. You don't have the visual cues that, of course, if you're Skyping, you do. It depends on what medium we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. You can share on YouTube all kinds of material.
Exactly. But let's say we're on just either email or Facebook and sending messages, Twittering, whatever. You know, you lack the visual cues, and that I think that's very important. But at the same time, there have also been studies that show that for first meetings, especially for people who are shy, online contacts are very, very good as openers because they allow you to talk to somebody without the distraction of the visual. And, you know, if all of us were honest, we would have to admit that looks play a role in who we talk to and who we don't want to talk to. We judge people by what they're wearing, more than what they're saying sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so those visual cues can sometimes get in the way of an initial relationship. Mm. It can be distracting.
Yeah. Well, I think that for some of my guests on this program, it's a lot more comfortable for them to be somewhere where they are not with me in the studio, mm-hmm. where we're on the phone.
Right.
It's a very familiar way of communicating.
Right.
Whereas
right.
sitting in the studio with the microphones and that kind of thing can be off-putting.
Absolutely.
And you can get lost in that. But the human voice over the telephone is so familiar and, you know, generally quite warm.
Right.
So it can cut both ways, I suppose.
Absolutely. And you know, some people, I'm sure you've heard people say, oh, I'm not a phone person. And I think that's true for some people. Mm. They don't want the limitation of only having the voice, or for whatever reason they say I'm not a phone person. That same person could be an email person, or might be very happy on Facebook. So I think again, we have so many choices now. I know that I have used Skype now, and Skype is so different from talking on the telephone. But I probably wouldn't Skype with a consequential stranger, because Skype is much, much more intimate than the phone. And whereas I'll call a consequential stranger. So it's really interesting. I think we've yet to really understand, and I know a lot of scientists are now scrambling to find out the answers to these questions. We've yet to understand really how all these different kinds of modalities are affecting our communication and our communities. One thing that's very interesting is one sociologist went into, he looked at communities, actually physical communities, where they had online access, so that they had internet, they had kind of a listserv that served people in the community. And they found that wherever they had this kind of communication, the community itself was more prone to take social action, to be proactive as citizens, as opposed to communities that were not, quote, wired.
Yeah, yeah. Very interesting. And I think we'll investigate that area of your book in a bit as well.
Mm-hmm.
Our guest this afternoon, Melinda Blau, co-author with Karen Fingerman of Consequential Strangers, The Power of People Who Don't Seem to Matter, But Really Do. These are people we interact with every day who influence our lives in little ways, in great big ways, but who are not close friends. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with a question, a comment. Join us with a phone call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now, a listener on line one. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. I'm trying to think of a nice way to say what's on my mind. But I don't know. I just guess I have to say it. It seems to me that academicians and researchers are taking what we already know in a lot of cases, especially when it comes to human beings and their behavior and their lives, coining new phrases for things that we already know about. So, you know, where maybe we would call what you're saying resources, neighbors, whatever. And I'm hearing you having to break things down and you know, categorize things too. Everything doesn't fit into the stranger part, maybe.
No,
maybe it fits into the
yeah.
Category, whatever the first word is, but not into the stranger part. So that sort of, like, always bothers me when we take words that are regular English words or words that we're used to conveying, the, you know, person on the street is used to conveying, and then y'all just sort of come up with another word that's in the dictionary and make it mean something that we already know what it means. So that's my
yeah, comment. I guess the point is kind of we know it when we see it, you know. You know, we know friendship, we know close friendship, we know acquaintance. But I think it is interesting to look at, and Melinda Blau, I'll let you take care of this, but it is interesting to look at how these relationships work, why they're important, why they're vital. And so I think that's maybe the value, Melinda Blau, of the term consequential strangers.
Well, yeah, let me say two things. One is that there are a lot of words in the English language, a lot of phrases like military intelligence, where it changes the whole meaning of the word intelligence, and that's kind of the way I think of consequential strangers. Mm. We're not talking about strangers. And the other thing I want to say to the listener, I think this is very important. One of the reasons, you know, we can't understand and we can't identify and value what we don't label. And as I said at the outset, there's this vast sea of relationships that many people have said to me, I never knew what to call my mechanic. I never knew what to call the woman at the taco stand who just throws in an extra bag of chips for me. But, you know, I really like it when I see her. I never knew what to call the guy that I always see at the convention every year. You know, we always have a nice talk, and we don't see each other for a year at a time. So I think that the important part of coining this term is that it makes us respect and honor that bigger, broader social landscape. And as I said, I don't care what, you know, whether people go around saying, oh, she's a great consequential stranger of mine. I don't think it's going to change the language, but I do think it's going to change people's social vision.
Yeah. Does a listener want to follow up, line one?
I do.
Yeah, okay.
I think that when you move away from what you're familiar with, especially when you're a little older and have lived a life someplace and you move away, you notice right away that you have moved into a place where it's just those people. It's your resources. It's your neighbors. It's the grocery. It's the teller at the bank. It's these people. But so we did have a name called resources. But in any event, it's that word strangers too, because in the context of what you're talking about, no matter if it's there's some other differentiation that I'd like to sort of bring out, whether it's the mechanic or the male person, whatever. There are people also who you just sort of connect with intuitively. You might not know how many kids they have, where they live, or whatever, but there is something deeper going on. You can spot them across the room. You feel good about going over and asking a question. Now there would seem to me the word stranger may apply, and yet there's some incredible familiarity that brings something of yourself that doesn't just need something at the time, but actually resonates. So I just wanted to throw that out.
Okay. I totally agree with you on that. And those are also consequential strangers, and I totally agree. There is that kind of chemistry between people. And that consequential stranger, by the way, might become a good friend. Very often that kind of initial meeting portends a deeper relationship. Or they might not. It might be, again, somebody you see every year at a friend's cocktail party.
Hmm. Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line two. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. This is delightful. I've heard about the book, and I've been wanting to listen to the interview here. I found that the concept, for me, has been a very leveling kind of thing. It's opened my eyes to different classes, quote-unquote, of people that you wouldn't normally interact with, different cultures. And as I get older, I sort of stop and I look at these people differently now than when I was a kid or, you know, a college student, whatever. And I kind of try to glean, what's this person like, really? I mean, I all have a chance to do that all the time. But it's been a very rich experience, and your book is really something that I've been hoping would be out there, but I wasn't really, you know, cognitively thinking it would be. I just was like, yes. it's wonderful, and I can't wait to get a hold of it.
Well, it's out today's its birthday, as somebody told me. It's out today.
Oh, great. Okay.
So.
I have dogs in the background, so I'm sorry. Another thing I wanted to say is I'm moving from Urbana, where I've lived for 26 years, to Vermont. And I have been trying to get there for 4 years, but I haven't been able to. But I connected with something there in the Burlington area called Front Porch Forum. And it started in Vermont, and hopefully it'll spread. But it's online, and it takes regions, like Burlington, I don't know. I live in one area of the city, which isn't a big city. It's about the size of Urbana. And they have regions, little neighborhoods, that's the word, neighborhoods that have various things going on, and the state representative, you know, she's writing all the time about what's going on, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of input and output, and, you know, people introduce themselves as, hi, I'm new on this, and
right.
I'm looking for such. It's a whole spectrum of things.
I think that's the kind of thing, that's the best of what the Internet can do. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And it does give someone a chance who's moving
right.
to have a leg up. I mean, 10 years ago, if you were moving from Urbana to Vermont, you had to just take your and get in your moving van and get there and hope for the best.
Right.
And now, and I've heard this actually from a number of people, I'm actually speaking to the Red Hat Society, which is in the book.
Yes.
And a lot of those women have told me that they've done it themselves through the Red Hat. You know, if they know they're moving,
mm-hmm.
they connect with Red Hat or cities. I'm sorry that keeps happening. They connect with Red Hatters in the new city, and then they have consequential strangers right there. So
that's neat.
I think it's great, and there's another organization that's done a similar thing, a very big internet group called God. All right, I can't.
That's okay.
No, I was going to say Move On, but it was where Move On started.
Describe it.
Oh, God.
What's it about?
Okay, we're going to have to drop that thought. This is a senior moment for me.
That's okay. I also wanted to say something really quick.
Yes.
This is a perfect, my life is a sort of a perfect example of this. I was stuck in Birmingham, Alabama, taking care of my mother-in-law 24/7. I mean, we could hardly leave the house. And I was missing my friendship so much and my dogs because they weren't there.
Right.
So I got online and I found something called datemypet.com. And I was married happily, so whatever. But I got on this, and I made friends all over. And I made a friend in Sweden who was a social worker, like I was, interacting with, her dog. And it was like we became friends.
Right, right.
Really strong friends. And I was trying to get her to come over here to take courses. And then we moved on.
Right.
And at first I was really sad about that.
Mm-hmm.
But
to see, that's a consequential change.
Exactly.
That's a perfect example.
Exactly.
And by the way, the group I was trying to think of was meetup.com.
Oh, I've heard of that, yeah.
And Meetup mm-hmm. does something very similar. They start groups. So, for example, I don't know what kind of dogs you have. What kind of dogs do you have? Labs?
Mutt.
A mutt, okay. So maybe there's a dog group on Meetup called yes. Owners of Mutts.
That's right.
Because I used to have a mutt, and people who
yes.
have mutts really love them.
Yeah.
And then you would join the group and find out, well, who are owners of mutts in your area?
Right.
And then they'd get together offline as well. And I
yeah.
think it's a wonderful concept.
I found one like that in Vermont.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you. And I hope you enjoy the book.
I will. Thank you. Bye.
Okay.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other calls are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll free 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, toll free 800-222-WILL. Our guest this afternoon, journalist Melinda Blau, co-author with Karen Fingerman of Consequential Strangers, The Power of People Who Don't Seem to Matter But Really Do. This is The Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. For me, one of the most interesting chapters of the book is titled The View from Above.
Mm-hmm.
And in this chapter, you tell a story about a place in Ghana and a woman by the name of Ava Schiffer.
Mm-hmm.
Would you tell us the story?
Yes. Ava worked for one of the government development groups, and she was working in Ghana. And her charge was to meet with the people in Bolgatanga, Ghana, which, to be honest with you, I had to look up on a map to see where Bolgatanga was, and it's in, I think it's in northwest Ghana. And her job was to meet with the people at the Water Basin Board. And the Water Basin Board consisted of people who were in government, in various levels of government in Ghana. There were people who were tribes people who were in the little local groups. But international development people, companies. So there were 17 people all together. I don't have the book in front of me, believe it or not, and so I can't tell you all of the characters. But there were 17 different characters who each had a different perspective on how to regulate water use, because obviously that's a very big problem in many of the African countries where there's poverty, there's constant drought, there are wars fought over water. And so it's a very, very serious problem. We have that problem in our own backyard. I mean, if you go into Florida or into the Midwest, not the Midwest, the Far West, we have tremendous water problems. So water use is a huge issue. And Eva conceived of this a thing called a network influence map. And actually, when I first heard about it, I thought, I don't even know how I'm going to translate this, that anybody, any layperson would want to even read about it, because it seemed very complex. But then I really kept reading and reading, and I realized what she did was really quite simple. What she did was she took a big piece of oak tag, and she would take each of the people that was on this water board. Water board does not have a good connotation anymore. On the board, the basin, they were called water basin boards, I believe. And each of them had certain people that they had to answer to. They had influenced, they had influences and were influenced by other people. Some had more power than others. So to denote that, she used little Ludo men. Ludo is a game played in West Africa. And they kind of, I don't know how many of your listeners or you remember, the little Fisher Price little people.
Little people.
They kind of look like little people. And so she put each little different color little people to little person to represent each of the players. And she showed how they were linked, who had more influence. And to show that, she would put somebody on, say, five checkers who had a lot of influence, so they were high. And maybe somebody just sat on the paper and they had no influence. And maybe somebody had two checkers, so they had a little bit of influence. And in doing that, she showed people, it helped people understand the dynamics of why it was so hard to reach a consensus, because everyone had different agendas, different goals, and she also plotted their goals. And it gave them a visual representation of what their little network was like. And even though she didn't, you know, miraculously solve the problems, they started to then appreciate each other's positions more, which is really half the battle. And if you translate that, for example, to a community organization, I have a friend in Tucson who is part of a neighborhood association. And to get a community garden started in that little tiny neighborhood was a six-month discussion, because everybody comes at these from a different perspective. And so Eva's influence map, and mostly the principles of it, of seeing how people are linked, who has influence, what are their goals, makes a huge difference when you can look at, that's the view from above, so that you actually see how these interactions and connections work. And Eva told me a story of a woman in Ghana who had come over there to do some reform in a school, and she came there hoping to really turn the school around. And what she didn't realize until she did an influence map was that most of the people in the school were hoping that she was there to help them raise money. Well, their goals were totally at odds. And she then did an influence map, and she saw that all the people that had the similar goal as she did didn't have very much power. And so that told her right away that something had to change, because she was never going to get anything done. So she either had to change her goal, or she had to convince people who had power that her goal might be worth doing. And she was able to do that. Once she saw all these links and influences in front of her, she realized what she was working, you know, that she, instead of going hitting her head on the brick wall, she figured her way around it.
Yeah. This is The Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Melinda Blau, co-author of Consequential Strangers. Let's take another call, a listener in the Chicago area, line four. Hi.
Yeah, we have what is called a table of organization that deals with the people on top and further down along the organization that may be of significance or consequence, but trying to reach the people on top is something else. But we have the other attributes of communication now, such that, like when Buckminster Fuller was talking about communicating with people, that was his hope and vision, and now we certainly can communicate people that we would have normally only maybe regarded as pen pals, but now we almost form an intimate relationship if we choose to develop it. And then you have a matter of Marsha McLuhan talking about the medium as the message, and we have so many messages now that we're being inundated, and being able to separate the wheat from the chaff is something, you know, we're being bombarded virtually by information, and disinformation, as we see in the media bias and other things that are occurring. So choosing people of consequence in terms of our relations can be rewarding and benefiting us to the extent that we can have some benefits from it. But your book is something I'm looking forward to reading, and I appreciate your views, and thank you very much.
Thank you. You said something very important, and Celeste, I think this relates to, you said, why are they important? One of the things that's so true today is that we are bombarded by information. And we are bombarded by information and constantly have to make very important decisions, where to send our child, how to invest our 401k, that's a whole other subject. You know, all of these questions of living, do we get a mortgage, do we go here, do we shop at this store or that store? And this is one of the key benefits of consequential strangers, because our intimates tend to know what we know. But consequential strangers, by definition, are different. It's like the other caller said, they're people from different walks of life, people that she normally wouldn't have come in contact with. And so when you have a problem, or you're presented with all this information and you just can't cut it through it yourself, very often it's a consequential stranger that can help you. That's one of the key functions of consequential strangers.
Yeah. Do networks of consequential strangers play a role in forming social movements?
Absolutely. In the book, I talk about, I take a little piece of history, which some of your younger readers, your younger listeners probably don't remember, but Freedom Summer in 1964 was the first time that kids from the North and teachers went down in large numbers. It was the early part of the Civil Rights Movement, and that movement was really propelled, as are most social movements, by consequential strangers. That, you know, the kids that ended up going had not close friends, but acquaintances. It could have been a teacher. It could have been someone who came through town and was talking about the importance of getting involved in civil rights. Could have been a pastor at their local church or synagogue. And it was those people that really pushed them to get involved in a bigger way. And what happens in a social movement, too, is that you have a collective. And when people are part of a collective and they have a mission, they have a tendency to be more than they are. You know, there's that slogan with the Army, do more than you can, be more than you are. I can't remember exactly. Be all that you can be.
You can be, yeah.
And there's truth to that, because when you're part of something, you can act braver, you can have more stamina, and it surprises you. It's a very energizing thing. I know I went down to Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina, and I was amazed at how much energy I had there, and I realized I was sort of, it's like being in a current. And you're swept along, and it's extremely exciting, and you then are more than you are as a single individual. And I think that's part of what happens with consequential strangers in these groups.
Yeah. There we have to leave it. We're out of time. Maybe we could wrap up here. I have the book open to a quote that I thought was helpful. And this is from a fellow who, of all walks of life, he's an executive at Procter & Gamble,
mm-hmm.
Craig Wynette.
Wynette, yes.
Yeah. And he says this is going to make a long story short, but there's a lot of talk in this chapter, The View from Above, about finding yourself at center,
mm-hmm.
and crossing boundaries.
Right.
And he says crossing boundaries means having the ability to benefit from the convoy, which means knowing how to listen.
Right.
And that's hard work. He says thinking is unbelievably expensive. The brain constitutes 2% of our body mass and uses 20% of our calories. But it's possible for anyone to change the way they see the world.
Right.
Yeah.
This is absolutely true. And one of the most gratifying things for me is that people who read the book and have read it already have said to me it really changes the way they walk in the world, and that, you know, as a journalist, you can't ask for more than that.
Mm. There we have to leave it. Melinda, thank you so much for talking with us
this
afternoon. Melinda Blau is co-author with Karen Fingerman of Consequential Strangers, The Power of People Who Don't Seem to Matter But Really Do. The book is published by W.W. Norton. And that interview was conducted on August 24th of this year. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. This is the Afternoon Magazine. It's 9 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Coming up, settlement prices from Kansas City and Chicago. And also we'll have settlement prices from Chicago on the livestock contracts. First, though, we begin with the grains. And here with that is Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much, Celeste, in Chicago. At the CME Group's Grain and Oilseed side, otherwise known as the Chicago Board of Trade, futures finished the day lower in the corn and the wheat pits. The beans were higher on the afternoon. December soft red winter wheat settled at $5.62.5. It was down 3¾ on the day with a top of $5.71.5 and a bottom at $5.49¾. Again, that soft red December contract settled 3¾ lower. March futures, $5.92¾ the high, the low at $67.5. Settlement price at $5.84. March wheat down 4, and the May contract, 603¼ the high, the low at 584¼, settled at 595½, down 4 cents. July, 613¾ the high, the low at $5.93¾, settled at 605¾, down 3¾. September futures, 626 on the high, the low at 10½, settlement price at $6.20, down 4½ cents. From the corn pit, nearby December futures, $4.50 the high, the low at 390, settlement price at 395, down 3. March, 416, the high, the low at 405½, settled at 410¾, down 3. In the May corn, 425½ for the high today, the low at 415¾, settlement price at $4.20½, down 3. July futures, 433¾, the high, rather 433¼, the high, the low at 423, settlement price at $4.28¾, and July corn settled 2 lower. September, 437, the high, the low at 428¾, settled at 433, down 2½. In December futures today, 443 the high, a 10-cent trading range with a low at $4.33, settled up closer to the top end at 438¾, 438¼, rather down 2¼. From the oat pit, nearby December contract was unchanged at 259½, the March at 273 unchanged as well. Now the green, that's the higher side of the day. In the bean pit, January contract there, 12 cents higher, $10.49 the high, the low at 10.16. Settlement price at $10.39 finished 12 cents higher after probing deep into the bottom side. March contract at 10.54½ high, low at 10.22. Settled 10.44¾, 11½ cents higher in the May futures, 10.55½ the high, the low at 27¼. Settled at $10.46¼, up 11. July contract, $10.59¼ the high, the low at $10.29. Settled $10.50, up 10¾ in the August soybeans, $10.50¾ the high, the low at the same, although that can't necessarily be right. We'll get a low a bit later. That August contract, $10.46½, was up 9 cents on the day. November soybeans for the afternoon, 2 cents higher, $10.32 the high, the low at $10.10. Settlement prices for next year's contract in the November, 2010 at $10.21½, up 2 cents for the day. December bean meal, $3.18.90 the high, the low at $3.07.60. Settlement price at $318.40 a ton, up $7.90. January, $9 higher at a $311.10 settlement price. December bean oil, $39.99 the high, the low at $39.20. Settled at $39.45. They finished down 30 cents in the January, 29 cents lower, with the settlement price at $39.89. During the closing market report this afternoon, we'll talk with Dan Zwicker. He's at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. A little bit of ag news. And Dave Dickey, your director of ag programming, will have that. And then I'll tell you all about the Ag Master's program at the University of Illinois. It replaces the old spray school and the past technology conference and all of those things that you were used to going to in the month of January. Now, the first and second day of December, you need to get registered if you can soon at Ag Masters. You can look it up online in Google. It should be a great program. Go see it today, and I'll tell you more about that during the closing market report this afternoon at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock, that first day of the program on December the 1st. I'll be the host of the program for the entire day. Now, let's recap what happened in Chicago. Wheat futures were about 3 to 4 cents lower, corn down 3 in the nearby. The FAR deferreds were down a penny, and beans gained 12 cents in the nearby contracts, about a penny in the deferred. More on those when we get to the closing market report in 10 minutes. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Rebecca King in Galesburg at 309-341-5007. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
December live cattle, the high today was 83.85, the low 83.17.5, the settlement 83.67.5, up 60. February, 85.47.5, the high 85.10, the low 85.37.5, the settlement up 40. April, 88 even, the high 87.65, the low, the settlement 87.87.5, that unchanged. June, 85 even, the high, the low, 84.70, the settlement, 84.87.5, up 7.5. November, feeder cattle, 93.02.5, the high, 92.90, the low, the settlement, 93.02.5, up 7.5. January, 92.05, the high, the low, 91.67.5, the settlement, 91.82.5, up 10. March, 93 even, the high, the low 92.62.5, the settlement 92.85, down 7.5. April, feeder cattle 94.10, the high 93.70, the low 94 even, the settlement that down 2.5. December lean hogs 56.35, the high 55.55, the low, the settlement 55.97.5, down 47.5. February 63.55, the high 62.90, the low, the settlement 63.27.5, down 95. April 67.40, the high, the low 66.82.5, the settlement 67.35, down 50. May lean hog 72.40, the high 71.70, the low 72.32.5, the settlement down 17.5. February bellies 88.50, the high 87 even, the low, the settlement 87.07.5, down 157.5. The Dow is currently off 115 points at 10,312. The NASDAQ off 38 at 2155. The S&P 500 off 17 at 1093. Nearby crude down 195 at 77.63. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana, online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our technical director is Henry Frayne. Coming up later today on The World from PRI, a story from 12,000 feet up in the Indian Himalayas. A glacier that feeds the river Ganges is shrinking, and that spells danger for hundreds of millions of people who depend on its water. India's vanishing ice, that story in the day's news coming up today at 3 on The World. Let's look at the forecast as prepared by Mike Sola. This afternoon for Illinois and Indiana, Mike says in southern Illinois, it will become partly sunny. Elsewhere, cloudy with scattered showers and areas of drizzle. Highs ranging from 45 in some northern and central locations to 55 in the far south. Tonight in Illinois, mostly cloudy early, then partial clearing with patches of fog forming. In Indiana tonight, cloudy with showers and drizzle during the evening and mostly cloudy with patchy fog forming after midnight. Lows ranging from 34 in west central Illinois to 40 in northern and eastern Indiana. Tomorrow, patchy fog during the morning, otherwise partly to mostly sunny, highs ranging from 48 in northeastern Indiana to 58 in far southern Illinois. As for the Champaign-Urbana area this afternoon,